Lord. All right, I'm going to hit that picture. I was bound and determined to see what that was. I wasn't going to knock it off. All right, I may knock it off, but that's okay. My name is Donna, and I'm an alcoholic. And I don't know whether I should start tap dancing or go over there and be baptized. It's a real conflict with me. I was sitting there thinking, and this is the hard part. This is the hard part because, you know, I know you run. But I can run, too. And I thought, I always want to run right off. I could run right down that mountain. Fog, you know, because I'm thinking, don't want to do this. But then God talks to me, and he said, it's your ego. You know, just get out of the way. I'll take care of you, little girl. I always take care of you. You know, it's that, won't you like me? And then I have to tell myself, no, they don't have to like you. You know, be nice, but they don't have to. And that's something the program's given me, and I am so grateful for that. I can't tell you. Oh, we're good. And because that was a guiding thing with me. I had a problem with authority figures, like most drunks do. Except my problem with authority figures was I wanted to please you. And and you really didn't have to be an authority figure. If you were breathing, I wanted to please you. And now that didn't mean I'd go on and do things. I'd manipulate you, but I did want your approval. I wanted you to tell me that I was okay. And through this program, I don't have to have you tell me that I'm okay. Yeah. It's still nice, and I'm human, and we all love praise, and we all love affirmation, but inside, there's a core of me that says, Donna, you're okay, and I heard at a talk one night, this guy said, you know, don't judge me where I am, you got to judge me where I was, and so looking back, I've come a ways. I can stay in the same room with me. I don't drive down the road now hoping a transfer truck will veer over. I don't go to church now and sit and take everybody's inventory. And I live in a small rural area, so it's pretty easy to take everybody's inventory because everybody knows your business. And that's another thing the program's given me. You know, there's nothing like good gossip in a small town. And the good thing, though, about AA is, like, if you're an elementary school teacher and you disappear for 28 days and your 11-year-old baby daughter tells people, she said, well, Mama, I told them you had the virus, but you can't have the virus for 28 days, and I couldn't think of any more diseases for you to have. And, you know, it hits. I can remember the day Mama called me. Mama said, Donna, it's hit the factories. Well, part of it is, I realize now, and I am an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, and that creates problems, but I'm a garden variety of drunk. All of us are egomaniacs with inferiority complex. I've come to learn that. But I had this friend that worked at one of the factories, good old Brenda Dodd. We went to high school together, and she called me, tough old girl, and she said, Donna, I'm hearing some things about you. And I said, yeah. And I was fragile. And she said, I just need you to tell me, and if you don't mind. She said, you were awful good to me in high school. And she said, I just want you to tell me before I beat the hell out of somebody tomorrow at work. And I said, nah, Brenda, I am. I was. And I'm working on it a little bit as best I can. And she said, well, you know I love you. And hung up. And that meant a lot to me. My world stopped. November the 7th, 1986. That's my sobriety date. That was my perspective then. I had my little suitcase packed. I had this man sitting there, drove me over to this treatment center. We stopped at Walmart and bought me some books to read. They took my books. They took my fingernail polish. I begged them for my makeup. They gave, let me keep a little makeup. And I walked through the doors, and the doors were closed. Now, I could walk back out. I mean, I wasn't there. The law didn't put me there. It would have. It was a yet. My family life was falling apart. He had gotten to the point he would say, "What happened to that fun-loving, gregarious girl I married?" And I would say, "She died." Because that's how I felt. I didn't know that alcoholism was sucking the life out of our family, out of our relationship, and out of me. I didn't have a clue what was happening with me. I knew that I was drinking too much, but I didn't realize that my drinking was just a symptom of my disease. And I didn't know how I got where I was throwing back vodka at 5:30 in the morning before I made the coffee, before I went to school to teach little elementary children, and when they would pee on each other in the bathroom. I taught second grade for several years. Second grade boys tend to do that. It's just the nature of the beast, and then they'd have to come in, and they'd come in, and I'd say, "Okay, Dwayne, 25 times I must use self-control." Well, it got to where I couldn't make them write that little sentence because I didn't have any self-control, and I was in my 30s, and it bothered me. Now, I teach fourth grade, and they're not bad to pee on each other. They do some other things, but my new sentence is, "I am responsible for my actions." And I can live with that because they are and I am. Don't always want to be, but I am. And this program's given me the strength to do the things that I need to do. And it's also given me the grace to not have to feel like I have to do them perfectly. This won't be a perfect talk. This will just be the best I can do right now. And that's all I got to do. All I have to do is suit up and show up. And I suited up. I put on the sparkles and everything. Milton called and he said, I want to welcome you, and I want to tell Milton I appreciate him inviting us up. And I appreciate all the people that have made us feel so at home and loving. And you can really feel the sobriety in this room. It's a comforting feeling. When I first came in, and now the best group, though, the best group is the New Albany group in New Albany, Mississippi. And if you're ever there on a Monday or a Saturday, come to the American Legion building. We'd love to have you. And there was this older man, Mr. Buddy, and Buddy would stand up and he would say, "You are my family." And I would think, poor man. He has no one. You know, he has nobody, so he's clinging to this group as a pseudo-family. And tonight I can stand here, and I don't know you, but I can look at you, and I can say, you're my family. I feel safe. Well, I feel as safe as you can say feel in a dysfunctional family. which makes me feel right at home because, you know, I'm in it, so it's got to be dysfunctional. That's the going thing. In fact, I'll tell you a joke. My father has had two strokes and several heart attacks. He's 80. He's an imposing man. My mother is 77, and she's not had any illnesses at all, but Mama's just crazy, but I love her. And she's about like this. Well, we just had a brand new baby, Miss Elizabeth Belmont Brock, Bella Brock, and I was helping out my daughter, and they were over there, and they came over for coffee, and they were sitting there, and we did the baby, and the baby was asleep. And so Daddy, he was in politics for 28 years, and he's a storyteller. And he says, "Oh, I got a joke." And I'm changing it just a touch. He said an old man, but I'm going to say an old drunk, you know, identify. This old drunk's robbing this house, and he's in this room. Now, this is not good to tell a joke that, well, I'll tell you later. All right. He's robbing this house, and all of a sudden, he hears this voice that said, "Jesus is watching you." And he looks around, and he sees his parrot. And he looks up at him, and he says, "Are you Jesus?" And the parrot says, "No, that's Jesus over there." Well, he looks over there, and it's a Rottweiler. And he said, "Well, who named him Jesus?" And he said, "The same people that named me Moses." Now, Daddy told that joke, and Julie, the mother, and my daughter, we died laughing. I don't know why we laughed. We just laughed. But Mama was sitting on the couch by me, and she said, "It's not funny." She said, "I don't get it. Is something missing?" And Daddy said, "Well, yeah, hell, since this stroke, I can't remember it all, but I remembered most of it." So if anybody knows all of that joke, I'm the oldest of three children. I have a sister who's 48. I have a baby brother who's 36. We were raised in a loving Christian home. At first, I thought that was a criterion for being an alcoholic because every talk I'd hear, everybody was raised in a loving Christian home for a long, long time. But, you know, my parents, when I first came in, I was angry at me. I was so angry. I was so resentful. I was so filled with self-pity. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to go to the meetings. I wanted to read that book, them give me my spiritual tools and whatever checklist, and I'd get a Sharpie and I'd get it done. And he was right there punching me at all the good parts that he thought, because he was going to get her done too. You know, his job was to fix me so his life would be better. And they kept saying, and I kept thinking, okay, I got to get it. And somewhere along the line, somebody said, "Well, baby, it ain't over till you're done." But by that time, I sort of liked being here, and I thought, well, I'll just slow down a little bit because I'm in no hurry. And but anyway, I did well in school. It's odd. I was very popular. I was a basketball player. I was witty. I was, you looked at me and you thought, now she doesn't have a problem in the world. She fits in, and to a large degree that, and I was a leader. I didn't go where I didn't want to go. I pretty much did what I felt like was the right thing to do. Like I said, I was a basketball player, and this was during the Vietnam War. And when some of them were playing about winning a game, I stood up and I said, "We can't do that." Because, I mean, I just felt compelled to say that because I was so touched by people dying. I knew deep in my heart that there were bigger things than a basketball game in life. And that's not to belittle sports, because I don't want to have to run out of the building or anything, but I'm just saying I realized that. And I was that type. I never appeared to study. I always was joking. I was always laughing. Nobody saw me study at night. That's when I studied. Nobody saw that serious side, because as a little girl, I was very, very shy. And I cried from first grade, and the last time I cried was in fifth grade. Now, I'm talking about on a continuous basis because of the shyness. And I remember crying at one time, and I don't cry pretty. I cry like that. And I was so embarrassed that I thought, I've got to do something. And I remember making the conscious decision that I was going to shove that shy part of me down, and I was going to bring out this clown, this not afraid of anything, this you joke with me and I'll joke with you right back and just sail right over. So the more frightened or the more threatened I felt, the more I would rip into a room. And rather than be a wallflower, I'd just come in like a steamroller. Because if you move fast enough and you move hard enough and you talk long enough, people can't tell you're scared. And it was only when I came into this program and I began to look at Donna that I allowed that serious, shy, introverted person to blossom. And one of my favorite people to be with now is me. I like working in my yard by myself. I like riding down the road by myself. And you're thinking, well, lady. But again, you got to judge me where I came from. Because like I said, there was a time when I rode down that road and literally said, I hate you. I hate you. And it was because of alcoholism. I didn't black out the first time I drank. The first time I drank to any degree, I didn't drink in high school because it just, I don't know why. I guess it was there. I just didn't. I got married very young. I got married at 18. Well, it was lust, and you know, that's all we knew to do to fix it, so we just up and got married, and we've been married ever since. Oh, me. I won't go there. Anyway, and so, you know, We took off, and I was real active. I was real active in my church, and I taught Bible school, and I remember teaching Bible school, and I was about, maybe 18, 19, and we didn't take a honeymoon. We just went to Tupelo, which is back 22 miles from home. We went in his little Carmagia. We washed it first. We went to Pasquale's Chicken, got chicken to go, went to the Holiday Inn, had our wedding night, and heck, by 6:30, 7 in the morning, we were over at his sister's house, you know. And so that summer, as we got more comfortable, we decided we'd go off to Panama City because his big brother had said it was beautiful there. Now, there were a lot of people that felt like these really good Christian ladies who looked like they never had a happy thought in their life sometime, but they would say, it was wrong to dance. Gosh, it was wrong to wear one of them bikinis. And it was wrong to drink. A lie was going to wear that blue bikini. And I loved to dance. And we were walking down that beach, and this was like 71-ish, something like that. And I had that store-bought, long, blonde, straight hair. And these wide, pink bell-bottoms. And everything was up here instead of down there. And I had them slung over my sandals, which were pink and white that matched my outfit. That's not important, but and I had them slung over my shoulder, and we were walking down the beach. And we didn't know about the sun then, or I didn't know. I was burnt to a golden crisp. And we were walking down the beach, and it was this concrete building, a concrete block building, and the windows were painted, and there was great music coming out of it. Now, he smoked, and he drank beer sometime when he dropped me off. So he was a little bit more worldly than me. And he'd been around some. And he said, do you want to go in? And I thought, yeah, I do. And we did. And when I walked in, it looked like everybody was having the best time. Everybody was happy. And that soul music was playing, and we danced. And I thought, he ordered a beer. Well, beer's sort of plain. I had read books, and so I ordered a screwdriver because I'd read about it. But I drank it just like I drink a Pepsi. And I continued to drink because I thought, well, this is probably going to be the only time I'm going to do this. And I want to get as much out of it as I can. And it really wasn't the booze. I was high as a kite when I went in. You know, just on life and on youth and on love and all the good stuff. So I ended up, and I was ordering drinks by the shape of the glass because I wanted to do like I'd seen. And I ended up with something called a grasshopper. It was green and, you know, whatever. Well, the consequences were we were walking, so I just sort of weaved back up the beach. He seemed to think I was adorable. I felt a little sick at my stomach, and that was it. Now, I felt guilty. But remember, the next week I went back and taught Bible school, and I brought a lot of children to Jesus to make up for it. And really, in my mind, for a while I could do my drinking that way. If we went out, we got paid monthly. Later on, when we would go to we live in a dry county, but we'd drive to Tupelo and go to a club. If we went on a Saturday night, then I'd work real hard at my Sunday school lesson the next day. Now, that's hypocritical, but for a while, I could balance it. I'd do good things, and I'd do bad things, because after all, nobody's perfect. But as the drinking increased, my pie baking for the elderly got dropped and my VOD consumption went up, so I couldn't use that anymore. And I felt bad because I didn't like hypocrites, and I was the biggest hypocrite I knew. My drinking started out like that time, literally a few times a year. And it increased to monthly. And then it was on the weekend. And then it was after work. And those boundaries kept being pushed back. I didn't realize I was crossing boundaries. I didn't know I was crossing boundaries. I knew that when I would take that drink in the morning in the utility room and I would just turn the vodka bottle up, that wasn't a social drink. But what you gonna do? Who you gonna ask? I can't go ask Mama. Because Mama had already said, "Now, Donna, you're not drinking too much, are you?" "No, Mama, no." And he had changed from this loving, gentle person who really loved me, who really enjoyed my company, to a bitter, angry, satirical man that said, "You disgust me." Couldn't ask him. I couldn't ask the ladies I worked with out in those little bitty chairs. You've seen all the elementary teachers. They're the one with the knees up to the chins, you know, sitting in the little children's chairs at recess. And you ever wonder what they're talking about in that huddle? Chicken recipes. That's what they talk about. And they'd be talking about chicken recipes. And I'm sitting there thinking, is this it? Is this what these women truly, some of those women I knew for 15 years. I thought, is this really what goes on with them deep in their hearts? Chicken recipes? My God, I'm so alone. I was not under a bridge. I had not been abandoned. I had not been rejected. But I was so alone. Because I couldn't say, "Linda, I'm drinking way too much and I don't know what to do." I couldn't even tell my best friend, Norma Jean. And I'd call her at odd times. And she loved me through it. And I couldn't tell God. Because God had been real good to me. He'd really, really blessed me. And I was throwing all those blessings back in His face. And I had this one recurring thought. The sins of the Father will be visited on the children, except it was the sins of the mother. Because by this point in my drinking, I didn't really care what happened to me. But I thought, God's going to get me. He's after me. He's going to punish me. And He's going to do it by hurting my children. And I was afraid. And I would not say to God, "I'm going to do better." Because I thought, I'm not going to lie to God. I would sit in church. I have this Bible. I have a prayer list in it. It has all these things. And year after year, it would have my problem. The problem. Me. And when the preacher would say, "If you are burdened," oh, that's a good place to do this, "if you are burdened, raise your hand." Well, I might certainly raise my hand for Miss Mary Jane. Let's remember Miss Mary Jane. But I would never, ever, even with every eye, every head bowed and every eye closed. Well, I ain't falling for that. I wouldn't put my hand up. And what was the use? Because the minute I got home, I had to have some vodka. I lost the camaraderie. We stopped clubbing because instead of that first place in Panama City where everybody looked happy and having a good time and lighthearted and friendly, the people that I saw in the clubs looked desperate and anxious and lonely. And I realize now they were just mirroring. I was mirroring what was happening with me. I remember one night in particular, I'd gone in the restroom, stumbled in the restroom, and there was this lady there, and she looked like your stereotypical female lush. Big old red hair to one side, mascara here, could hardly stand up, hard looking, 10 miles, bad road. And I was crying. And there was no fight or there was no reason. I was just crying because I was so sad. And you know, we drunks are loving people. We're self-centered and we're awful, but we are loving. And she said, "Baby, it'll be all right." And I said, "No, ma'am, I don't think it will." And she just patted me. Now, I don't know why that lady stayed with me. I'd like to hope she found some peace. She was sweet to me, even in the midst of her addiction. I got to where I had this thought in my mind. I changed jobs too. I had a real hard time teaching elementary children. I had a real hard time saying, "Paula, you start the social studies class. I'm going to run to the car, take a nip of vodka, and I'll be right back with you." And so he was a salesman. He was a man. And I was mad about that too. Because men sort of got a free ride, I thought. You know, old Bubba, I tell you what, he's a good worker. Until you get that booze in him. And he's hell on wheels. You know, nobody ever said, "I tell you what, that Donna, she can wash those dishes and teach those kids and fold those clothes until you get that booze in her, and then woo!" You know, nobody ever said that. And so I was sort of mad at men because I thought they had it easier. And then I knew salesmen liked to party and drink. So I thought, I don't really have a problem. I'm just in the wrong profession with all these little children and chicken recipe people. So I changed professions, and I went into office sales, office supply sales. Had I ever worked in an office? No. Did I know anything about office supplies? No. Did it matter? No. What mattered was I was selling on the road in a four or five county area. Now, I can't tell you a lot about the offices in that 4 or 5 county area, but I can carry you to every liquor store. And that was my transfer truck doings. I'd drive home. It was 78 highway. It was not four-laned. It was a treacherous piece of road. And I did not buy pints and stick them in my boot or my shoe. That's not economical. I bought fifths and just stuck them under the seat. And you can take a spiked heel and kick it up under the seat even when the law's coming. And which it did. And I would think, transfer truck, veer over, and then I think, no, there's booze in here. Don't want that. And I think, well, you just got to do that sometime when there's not booze in here. And then I'd think, there's never not going to be booze in here. So, you know, it was a problem. He had won some trips through his work. And this last trip, I finally went on back to teaching, drunk or not. And my drinking did increase, though, increased tremendously. He won a trip on a love boat. It was just like a real love boat. And we went to Puerto Vallarta, And you know how in your carry-on bags you carry underwear and essentials? Do you know what we had in both our carry-on bags? Well, of course you do. We had booze. And it was like free booze everywhere you turned around. But we had our own booze with us. And we talked about divorce on that trip. And I remember being out on that boat, and I remember thinking, this is awful. I was so caged. And late at night, I'd stand there on that big old ship, and I'd look over the side. And I'd think, how wonderful it'd be. How wonderful it'd be just to disappear. Now, I had an 11-year-old and a 4-year-old. And my mama still loved me. And Randy loved me. Not a whole lot, but he loved me. Norma Jean loved me. But I thought, when it gets to be a problem, I'll get rid of the problem. And I was the problem. One Saturday morning I got up. No reason. And I decided, this is it. I can't do it. I was too tired. I was 33 years old, and I was too tired. So I attempted suicide through vodka and a bottle of pills, because I had gone to my doctor way earlier and told him I was a little bit nervous and I was depressed, and so he prescribed some Desiril for me. And one night, Randy came in the kitchen. I had my vodka and grapefruit juice sitting there, and he said, Donna, those pills make you slur your speech. I said, you're exactly right, and they're addictive, and I'm not taking them anymore. So I put them up in the cabinet. Don't mess with my liquor. Liquor's quicker. You know, the pills I could take, coming to. But anyway, I failed. I didn't manage it. I had left notes, and I got sick quick, and I was down to 97 pounds. And he said, what the hell have you done? He said, you've taken something. And I said, yeah. And I said, get me to Tupelo. Because he said, I'm carrying you to the hospital. And I said, well, get me to Tupelo. Because I thought Tupelo's 20-something miles away. Maybe I won't make it. And he said, I am not. I'm carrying you right up here to New Albany. I should have said, carry me to New Albany. And he said, I am not. I'm carrying you to Tupelo. You know, at that point, we were like that. A student of mine came in, was a nurse. All the people I knew, I was so ashamed. When I came to the next day, was I grateful that I was alive? No. Am I grateful today? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Went into treatment. My old pink house coat, first meeting, closed meeting, sat there the whole time. This guy came in from the outside and talked. And all during his talk, I'm a teacher and I'm a student by heart. I'd raise my hand. I know how you feel. I felt that way too. And you know, he never said, lady, will you hush? He said, I know. And after it was over, I was going back. He came up, put his arm around me. And he said, it'll be okay now, I can promise you. And I didn't see how. I did not see how. Humiliation does not kill. I went back to that same school. I went back to that same church. There are a lot of loving people in this world. I had a lot of people come up and say to me, how you doing? And I'd say, pretty good. Okay. I'm taking it a day at a time. I had a few come up and go, well, how are you doing, honey? Fine. Doing fine. You know? And the shame, the guilt, the ego, go in Walmart. First time I went in our local Walmart, you know, Donna Cobb, the alcoholic, is on row 4. And then I realized, well, this program gave me a wonderful gift. It gave me sobriety, and it gave me the ability to think, it don't matter. And nobody cares about Donna. You know, it's not that big a deal. The world didn't stop turning. I'm an alcoholic. It's all right. Oh, and another thing, when I first came in the program, I'd hear these people, oh, they were friendly, and they were happy, and they were huggy. And they would say things like, I'm done and I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic. And I'd think, gosh, I'm not. And it made me mad, sort of. And God has, now, the God I know, my higher power, has a sense of humor. Because I'd be dadgum if after a few 24 hours... And tonight, yeah, I wished I could have gotten those lessons without the damage that my behavior through this disease created in my family. Yeah. But I didn't. And I stand here, and I am Donna. And I am grateful I'm an alcoholic tonight. Because I'm going to be keeping that grandbaby. I'm retiring. If I hadn't found sobriety, I don't think I'd be here. And we know what my 3 choices were. Same as your 3 choices. Either sober up, they lock me up, or they cover me up. It was that way 18 years ago. It's that way today. And if I were not locked up, but out loose, do you think Julie would entrust me with that baby? Would we be up here driving in his little red car? But that's another story, and I'm not going to take your inventory, which I enjoy. Laughing and talking and listening to music. And making new friends, and eating, and eating, and eating. No, no. We're very blessed. We're very blessed, regardless of the pain. And I've heard some of you share. And I don't have to know you. We all have pain, and we're either in a valley, going in it, coming out, you know. Don't pray for growth. But even with the reality of it, even with the uncertainty of life, I'm so blessed. And I'm so happy that I got a shot. I got a direction. I'm not alone. And I don't know what time it is, so I'm going to sit down. And I thank you.